You're listening to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor, powered by bbbgive.org. Here, we explore the motivations that form the basis of giving and service. We inspire generosity and celebrate the transformative effects that giving and service have on the human spirit and on community. The conversations featured on the podcast also uncover giving strategies that educate and provide tools to help listeners make impactful gifts of both their time and money. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast, powered by bbbgive.org. Give.org is the nation's standards-based charity evaluator and your one-stop source for information on giving and reports on the most asked-about charities. I'm Art Taylor, your host, and with me today is Eduardo Valaro, Artistic Director and CEO of Ballet Hispanico. Mr. Valaro's philosophy of dance stems from a basic belief in the power of the arts to change lives, reflect and impact culture, and strengthen community. Eduardo considers dance to be liberating, nonverbal language through which students, dancers, and audiences can integrate ongoing conversations about the arts, expression, identity, and meaning of community. Eduardo grew up in a difficult situation in the 1980s and 70s in the Bronx. He was bullied, called derogatory names, and even physically beaten. Despite the physical and emotional pain, he didn't shy away from conflict, and he learned to negotiate out of difficult situations, whether it was a way to get his bike back from being stolen from the block, or just figuring out how to resolve an issue with a neighborhood bully. He says having a little bit of calle or street in him has provided him with an advantage and an edge during his career as a dancer and now also as a leader. This unique trait, combined with the ability to code switch from the concrete streets of New York City to corporate boardrooms and every place in between, is very much a part of what makes Eduardo an effective and compassionate and respected leader. It's also how he's able to infiltrate and break through various cultures and institutions to enable the necessary inclusion and viability for people of color in marginalized communities, especially in the dance world. We're going to talk with Eduardo about his organization, the Ballet Hispanico, and also about his philosophy, some of which I've just mentioned, the community arts partnership education philosophy, and also the importance of arts and dance in particular as we head into the future. Well, Eduardo, welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast.
Art, thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, Eduardo, tell us about Ballet Hispanico, what it does and what its aims are.
There's nothing more that I'd like to do than tell you, because I love this organization so much and it's been part of my life for actually a good chunk of it. I won't tell you how old I am. But Ballet Hispanico is the nation's largest Latinx dance organization. It has also been named one of America's cultural treasures by the Ford Foundation recently. Ballet Hispanico was formed by Tina Ramirez in 1970 to give access and voice to Latinx artists and youth. It is an organization that began from grassroots origins in teaching young Black and Brown kids the art of dance when, you know, the only way you can get to that was through the ballet world, which was a hugely white dominant cultural institutions that was very difficult to get into. So Tina Ramirez started developing these workshops and classes for young kids. They became very good. They started dancing in the streets, in fairs, in marketplaces, in makeshift theaters. They got so good, they became a dance company. And in 50 years, because we're celebrating our 50 years of being alive, hooray, our anniversary this year is remarkable. So in 50 years, it has developed to an organization that is built on access to the arts for all communities, focusing on Black and Brown communities, but also on the ability to see new works that develop other narratives than what we have in the predominantly white arts organization and theater and on stage. So this is the other side of who we are. And it was an organization that was began at the same time that many other cultural organizations of color, like the Alvin Ailey Dance, American Dance Theater, and Dance Theater of Harlem also grew. So we're all in that. It was a time where people of color were really saying, we need our voice.
That's wonderful. I had a chance to meet Arthur Mitchell, so I have a real strong sense of what your organization is about, even though Arthur's organization, Dance Theater of Harlem, was a different organization, but I'm glad you mentioned that they all came up around the same time, seeking to create opportunities for people to break into this genre. Now, you mentioned to me that there's a relationship between the community arts partnerships and the Ballet Hispanico. What is the concept of a community arts partnership?
The community arts partnership is the third leg of this three-legged stool that is our organization, our professional company, our training or our school of dance, and then the community arts partnership. Community arts partnership is that community service arm for me, in my estimation. For the organization, it is about community engagement. So what this organization does is bring this art form in unique different ways to a variety of communities, both here in the city of origin and when we're on tour. And what it is about infiltrating into the community and giving them the same access that, let's say, a young student coming in to train or a young professional starting and dancing with the company gets, right? It is not only about training or dance, it is about cultural immersion. So we are able to go into communities and build different types of workshops and events that give the community a sense of ownership around cultural dialogue and the learning about the intersectionality that is who we are as Americans and who we are as Latinx people and people that have come from years of fusion and intersection. Let me give you an example or else it just stays up in the clouds.
Right, great.
So we do everything from we go into public schools and teach Latinx culture and dance to kids from kindergarten through high school. We go into the university systems and we teach there similar things, but we can also do forums where we talk about issues of racial awareness and culture or dance. We go into, these are some of my most fun. We work with the disabled communities when we're on tour with special workshops that engage that community. Again, access. This is all about access for these communities. We've worked with young incarcerated youth, and that's something that's really important for me because there is where my community of Black and Brown brothers and sisters are. And so if we're able to go in and open a window for these young people to find their artistic selves and to find another means of expression, I think that that is something that's very important and that only the arts can do in a very special way.
So just speaking about expression, how might the arts in particular help young people find a way to express their culture? I know that there are many dance techniques, I would imagine, that focus on just learning the craft of dance. But how does one go from learning, let's say, the craft to actually expressing their culture? How does that play out in a dance routine, for instance?
So we want to go beyond a dance routine. A lot of folks might see things on the media and it looks very rote and in sequence. Dance is so much more than that. And so what we do is bring the art form of dance as far as it's an artistic process. So in learning process, you are learning to remove yourself and learn something else, right? So already psychologically, you're kind of putting your personal, hopefully, and your ego to the side in order to take in a specific technique. Once you've gone beyond the technique and you start learning, there are ways to utilizing dance concepts in order to build aesthetic, build opinion, craft critical analysis. And so what you're doing is you're giving a set of tools to the young mind that can be used in other ways. I mean, I know lots of dancers that are incredible financial officers now because they know how to organize their thinking. And so that's the bridge. That's the bridge that you take from any art form, from playing the violin, from practicing your piano. There is the technique. And then above that is the actual process awareness and looking at how you can use these newfound talents of, you know, if you're forever trying to make movement into image, you are really requiring your whole mind to translate two very opposing things. How do you translate movement to emotion? How do you translate movement to narrative? And I just want to say that that is it. Because dance is its own language, it is a corporal language, what you're doing is you're removing yourself to learn that language, and then you're adding on, right? I hope I explained myself well.
No, I think you are. You're giving us a sense of just what the artist is experiencing and trying to convey to those who are watching the performance. And even if they aren't watching, it's a, I would suspect, inner understanding that the artist is generating for him or herself.
Correct.
So it's beautiful the way you've actually explained it.
And I have to say that sometimes folks want to get art, get it, understand it. And that's not the point. And I always tell everyone, you know, just sit back, relax, and feel your feelings.
Yeah.
If you're upset about it, ask yourself why.
Yeah.
What's it not connecting for you? And so I love when an audience leaves a Ballet Hispanico performance and they're like, I didn't know that. What? That music is Latin? How? I've got to then do my own research. We're spoon-fed too much. It's about us moving beyond ourselves. And I think that's what the arts do for our young people.
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole cultural issue is kind of interesting because people who live in America can represent lots of different cultures all at once.
Yes.
You know, and it's just, I guess it would be gratifying to you to watch performances or to be a part of performances that sort of bridge different communities as they go about performing or choreographing a piece. Do you see that very often?
I do see that. I see that a lot. And I see that when a community has enough access to the arts, to a diversity of arts, dance and music and theater. When a community is engaged and has the ability to do that, it happens.
Well, you know, I asked that question for a very special reason, which is if you look at our society today, we're very polarized. You know, we have certainly racial reckoning going on, which is due and timely, of course. We also have many who are part of what we might consider to be an incumbent culture that are fearful of what the racial reckoning might lead to. And somehow it seems to me that we have to be able to communicate and bridge these cultures. I'm sort of from a sports background, and I always found athletics to be something that could bring people of different backgrounds together, create greater understanding. Do you see the same thing going on in dance particularly?
Absolutely. In the arts, mainly in dance, again, because it is of the body, you come into a studio and it's not about your color, your accent, nothing. It's about what you're going to bring to it through your body. So again, I'm not saying that there's no awareness of culture or color. Trust me, we all have to do this work. But I do want to say, you know, when you started talking about the polarization today, there's something that happens to me when I sit in an audience with a diverse group of people. And here's what the arts does. It actually forces you to be in communion all at the same time. It is very similar to a sports team playing. It is similar to church. It is similar to those moments when we come as a community. And sometimes I sit and I feel the and the ahs, and it's all the same. There's no polarization. You find yourself in there. And so you have to let go and sit back, and then you're focused on this. But sometimes you realize, oh, there's someone else is really laughing at that joke. That's why the arts are so important, and why we can then take that audience. And I've been in a lot of talkbacks. You know, when you do an artist talkback, it's so helpful for that audience, to bring that audience into a next level of understanding. So we've got a lot of work to do. And I think team playing and sports is one of those. As with everything, you're there because you're committed to this love that you have of movement and of competition.
Yeah, love of movement. So you somehow developed a love of movement in your life.
Yes.
That sort of led you to this. And I read a little bit about your background in the intro. And I would say that given, you know, the dance traditions, or what I understood the dance traditions in this country to be, it might be somewhat unlikely for someone from your background to be in dance. How did this happen for you?
Oh, gosh. You know, I often think about that because I was certainly not the kid with the pedigree or the privilege. I came here to the United States when I was 6 years old from Cuba. I then moved to the Bronx. We lived in the Bronx in the 80s where, you know, New York City was literally, like I say, and figuratively burning. It was a tough time. But, you know, I fell in love with the art form because of an eighth grade teacher. So I'm just going to put in a plug for teachers. And that one person that can change your life forever, there's always a teacher back there. So I just want to honor that because I think they should be held to the highest regard. So this teacher used to be a director, and he decided to direct a musical. And the musical was You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And I was cast as Linus. And Linus has a dance with a blanket, his favorite blanket. And I did the dance, and the communion that I felt with the audience for an immigrant kid who was learning to forget his language and himself, which I was being asked, because assimilation at that point was just to forget your cultural background because now you're an American. That was something very special for me. I connected with an audience. I connected with people that I was still afraid of. So that began my love of performing. And then it became, you know, I had my own Billy Elliot story. You know, I started doing capoeira, and which is a martial arts that's movement based. And then from there, snuck into ballet classes. I couldn't tell my family, you know, big machos who were all baseball players. In fact, my stepfather was traded from the Cuban national team to the Washington Senators at that time, who are now, I think, the Texas something. I forgot. Anyway, so you would know that.
Texas Rangers, yeah.
Texas Rangers, yes, thank you. So we were big sports people, and I was supposed to join that crew, but I didn't. And then it came time to go to college, and I had to come out to my parents as a dancer, and I did. And they were like, they didn't know what to say. But I was able to kind of level things off by saying, by the way, I got a scholarship. I would never have gone. So dance saved me. I'm going to say this. I say that often. It saved me from the streets of New York. It gave me an education. It helped me get the education of being the first person in my family to have a college education. And then it helped form me as a person. So it's scrappy. I went all over the place working. And I mean, I have a long story about everything I had to do in order to pay for all of that, but I did it.
Well, give me just a little more about, you know, how you managed to get the training and education in dance as a youngster. You know, where did all of this opportunity for you come? How did you, as a young person, figure out this whole landscape to get what you needed to actually get to a place where you could get a scholarship?
Well, some of it was just putting your foot in the door, right? I started these classes, and then I snuck into this one ballet class. The teacher saw me and then said, hey, there's this scholarship audition. You're pretty good. Why don't you go? And so it was by being persistent, by never accepting no. This is easy for me to say now, but I wasn't even thinking about it at that point. The persistence in me was that I was so wanting so to be that artist that I begged, borrowed, and stealed all the time. Just trying to figure out, where can I place myself in order to be seen? And I auditioned for Broadway shows. I tried it all. Now, I have to say one thing. I'm a male dancer. We have more male dancers now, and the stigma of being a male dancer was a little harsher when I was growing up. So it was easier also for male dancers to get the positions and get the jobs and get the training. But my big break was when I got a scholarship to a summer program at the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. And Mr. Ailey was still alive. So I was in a class when he came in.
Wow.
And I was just so taken. I mean, I was so taken by these giants, him. And then after that, I went and did a course at the Martha Graham School because they needed guys. So they needed guys, and I was like, well, I'm a guy. I'm going to go. So I went, you know, not having another kind of technique. So I had to learn that technique and worked with them as well. To me, it's always the immigrant mentality. You just got to do. You got to do and find out how to do it and see how you can survive. So that's what I did pretty much for my career.
Wow. Well, to some extent, it was the goodwill of others that enabled you to...
Without a doubt. I have a long list of thank yous in my life.
Well, now you're giving back, though. So as you became a dancer, you obviously saw something about the importance of the production and the business of dance, so to speak, which I guess has led you to being now the CEO of your organization, you know, Ballet Hispanico. But how did that come about? Which is, by the way, you know, a nonprofit organization, I'm assuming, and it's there to support the needs of young people and others and audiences who want to engage in your genre. How did you come to that? And was there anything about your background that led you to do this in a nonprofit form, a form that is really established to give back?
Yes. You know, that's a great question, the way you posed it. Thank you. I think that this is why it's important for us to be aware of young people, to see leadership. Leadership is, and it's my experience now when I see young people, leadership is a spark that you see, and it's not something that you immediately train, but that you allow to blossom by giving opportunities. And I was given opportunities. As soon as I joined this company, I want to say Ballet Hispanico, because I was a dancer here. I want to say that I started relearning what it is to be proud to be Hispanic. At that time, we were using that word. And what an amazing amount of information I still needed to learn about my culture and where I come from, the roots of who I am, was very important. And that ability that the art form gave me first, just by learning dances and being in conversation with other artists, was a stepping off place for me to say, I want to keep sharing this in different ways. And then Tina Ramirez, the founder and my mentor, saw something in me and said, you know, I think you're a great teacher. You're going to teach. So she put me into certain roles for teaching. And then all of a sudden, one day she said, you're great with kids. There's a program for kids living in temporary shelters in New York City. That time, that was a problem in the late 80s. And we need to set up a program for the kids. You have to do it all. I'm like, okay, what does that mean? So I needed to bring the kids in, talk to the city, have them dropped off. I had to feed them breakfast, feed them lunch, set the curriculum. So in a way, that was the beginning of my organizational skills I mean, I think I had some from school. That's the, you know, those executive skills you learn just by being educated. But this was, I was able to be thrown into the fire and succeed. And I succeeded. It was a wonderful program. We did it for a few years. And I was like, again, put your foot in the door. I went to McDonald's, just a neighborhood, and I was like, okay, I need breakfast. So I started building, in those small ways, the business acumen, right? And that led me to other things. So that was a program. Then I did another program. Then I was helping with the contracts for the dancers here for the organization because nobody else would do it. So I started doing that. So I put myself in the direct line of fire because I wanted to have a voice and I wanted to make sure that my culture had the correct profile and was shown in a very amazing way, the amazing way that of our cultures.
No, I'm smiling as I speak to you about this because this happens so often with nonprofit organizations. You know, we have appetites that are, you know, so voracious when it comes to helping and serving. And a lot of times the food we have doesn't quite match the appetite, you know, so we're out there, you know, just doing what we can. We're putting people in positions to do things, you know, for the first time. And they think it's a pretty narrow job, but they find out how broad it is. Everything, as you said, from identifying the young people to be in the program, to finding them food, to teaching them how to dance. The experience can be very holistic and broad, you know, when you're working in a nonprofit organization. And I want to hold that up because this is also, I think, a great way for people to learn to lead. You know, when you have to get involved in almost every aspect of something to make it work, you know, and that's the bottom line, right? We have to make it work because in the end, we want a result that's going to benefit either our community or the young people or our mission. And so I'm so glad you talked about it graphically the way you did your first real experience in leadership, which was, you know, nobody's giving you anything. They just say, go out and make it happen. You know, this is something we need to do. I need you to find a way to make it happen. I need you to use all your talents, all your interests, all your ability, all your hustle, as you refer to it, your immigrant sort of hunger, so to speak, to make something happen. And that's what you did. So I'm just holding that up and smiling because we've all, if you've been around the nonprofit community very long, you've been in that role. And
right.
It's just so amazing what you learned from it.
All right. Thank you so much for holding that up because that is something I tell everyone. If you give us agency, if you give a child agency, if you give a community agency, they will do it. But you must support. And so for communities of color that have been marginalized and oppressed and withheld from that agency, we fall into, you know, so when you have one leader, you realize that you're bringing everybody with you and you have to do it. So there's a thing for me that I must do that. I must continue to do that for my community.
Yeah. So now your leadership obviously spills down on those you influence and those who support you. What type of organization are we talking about at Ballet Hispanico? What type of enterprise are you actually leading structurally?
Structurally, we are a non-for-profit organization. So everything that comes in has to go out, pretty much, right? Yeah, there's no, you know, there's no investment. However, there's new discussions and new thinking about, in particular, organizations of color and the need to invest in them. So we have been very blessed with a group of donors for the 50 years that understand the importance of this organization for New York and the nation. So structurally, what we're learning to do now, we just received a major gift from Mackenzie Scott.
Oh, wonderful.
So now we're learning how to invest. So we've invested in community physically. We've invested in community emotionally. So now how do we take a gift like this and invest in this organization for sustainability and to be there for this same community 50 more years from now? It has been a blessing to receive this gift. It's beyond. It's the biggest gift the organization has ever received in 50 years. So I think as we move forward, I'm very much interested in this organization being a cultural leader and connector that not only is here to continue this profile, but is here to help, again, how do we bring everybody with us? So how is our programming going to do that for other smaller organizations of color?
No, it's beautiful that you're thinking that way. I mean, I often think about the future. I'm sort of one of these people, even though I won't be around forever. I do spend a fair amount of time thinking about the next 10 years. While I live in the current moment, I think about, you know, what's the next 10 years going to look like? You know, how are we going to manage through our next series of crises that come up? And how do we make our organizations both resilient and able to serve these new needs that will obviously come, maybe at the intersection of things like climate, land use, racial reckoning, polarization, and so forth? How are you thinking about the future now that you have a moment to maybe breathe and actually think about the future, given this amazing gift that you've received? How are you thinking about the future, not only of your organization, but of dance to serve society?
Well, we've been dancing since the fire was made, right? Since from the dawn of time, when man decided to build his fire and come together, dance was part of ritual, was part of transition, whether it's from age to birth to death. Movement was a language that connected us all. And so I think it is my task and the task of everyone in this field to continue to make everyone understand how this form, as you said, how sports can bring us together. I think that we are in a time of reckoning, and our practices, even within how we run things, how the information we give students, how we make sure that our students are not only physically eloquent, but mentally stable and eloquent, how we support in a holistic way the full human experience and the human being. And I think that that's an internal conversation, certainly, that we're having. And that also brings in topics of climate change, topics of continuing forums. So we have a great program called Diálogos, which means dialogue, where we talk about race, dance, and culture, how we come together and start chipping away at those structures that have maintained people oppressed or without action. I think that we as an arts organization need to understand that, personally, it's my humble opinion, that the arts organization is no longer a pretty vase that you put on a shelf. It is an organization of service to the art and to the community. This is not about the diva that needs flowers every day after the performance. No, it's about the diva that needs to go talk to the audience after the performance. So how are we building more connectivity with us as humans? So that is where I think that we need to continue to go, because if not, you'll fall on the wayside. So we have a lot of arts genres and art types that are people are questioning, is this going to survive? Is the opera going to survive? Is a symphony going to survive? I don't know. If you continue being who you were before, you might not, because you're not talking to anyone. You're not connecting with anyone. And you're still upholding hierarchy and supremacy. So that's going to go.
Yeah. So important to, I guess, remain relevant to what's going on in the world and to reach your audiences where they stand or sit, so to speak. As you think about now your role in society, as you think about the future maybe of dance, what do you see for young people entering this field? What are we talking about as we interact with young people who are probably more familiar, I would say, with a video game than they are maybe even with play. I had a woman on one of my podcasts who is all about creating safe play spaces for young people. Yet young people don't get much opportunity to just go and play. Everything is organized. Everything is structured for probably good reason. But how do we think about engaging young people in this dance that you say has been around since fire? You know, how do they see it these days? Are they seeing it differently than they did, Eduardo, when you were growing up? What are you actually finding that you have to do now to engage young people in the genre?
I have to be honest. I don't think there's anything to do. Once a child is exposed,
yeah,
I think you just have to let them. I think what we have to do is remove fear from their parents and the adults.
Great.
We need to come from a place of exploration, of inquisitiveness, and of curiosity, and allow for it, and not immediately go in to formulate a structure around it. The helicopter mom and dad is why we have this generation. And I'm not going to go into that, right?
No,
why we have a whole generation of extremely entitled and privileged young people, yeah, that will fight you on everything. And, you know, us oldies are like, well, we didn't get to do that. But anyway.
No, that's good. This is important. That's
not the point. I think we have to just remove fear. I have a 13-year-old who is into gaming and everything. I am not going to be afraid from it. And we actually say, yes, okay, do it. However, here's what we're going to do today, another day. We're going out, we're walking, we're doing this, we're doing... So you offer an array of things. They're always going to go towards something they love. Great, that changes. We have to allow children to be children, and of course, caretake. But there's I see a lot of fear in parents. And the fear is that if I'm not perfect, it's not going to go right. And we have to relax perfection and allow for curiosity.
Well, I hear the teacher in you coming out, and I'm really inspired to hear what you say, because I think young people deserve that, you know. They deserve the opportunity to not be afraid. Like maybe you had to be at different points in your life when you were growing up in a tough neighborhood where you were bullied. I had some of the same experience, but you know, we rise above that. Young people deserve not to be afraid and to have these opportunities that you're creating. And I know we're just about out of time, so I want to thank you for joining me on this edition of the Heart of Giving podcast. And I am really inspired by what I'm hearing. I think dance is a beautiful way to express, as you've eloquently stated today. I think that it is with us for the long haul. I think whatever we become as a society, we will be dancing, because I know from looking at my granddaughter, she seemed to come out of the womb dancing, you know, and if I get pictures almost every day of her spinning around in a room,
oh my goodness,
you know, it's just, you know, it is a joy to just watch them. And there's no teaching. There's no person standing over them saying, I want you to dance. There's just sound and their response, their bodily response to the sound. Or even if there's no sound, it's what they hear in their own heads that makes them move their bodies. And I think we're going to have this going on in our world forever. I just hope that it can be, as you want it to be, something that connects us, something that gives us real meaning and understanding of each other, and something that can save us, frankly, from ourselves when that time comes, if that time comes that we need that kind of saving. So, Eduardo, I can't thank you enough for joining me. I'm so glad that we connected, and let's stay in touch. I look forward to coming to New York,
please,
and seeing, you know, some performances and experiencing your work on a firsthand basis. And I get up there a fair amount. I have a family in New York. That granddaughter of mine I'm talking about lives in New York, and I also teach at Columbia University, so I get up there quite a bit. So
wow,
we will definitely connect and have a chance to experience your work.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your questions and and for the work you do.
It's my pleasure. That's why we're here. Eduardo, I want to thank you for joining me on this edition of the Heart of Giving podcast. And to all our listeners, I hope you'll subscribe or follow us on your favorite podcast platform. We'd also appreciate it if you would give us a positive review, especially on Apple Podcasts, because this will help us build audience. If you want to do a little bit more, you can become a sustaining donor to the Heart of Giving podcast on patreon.com. That's patreon.com. And also, finally, if you want to reach us, because we'd love to hear from you, please do so on Facebook, or you can just send us an email to heartofgivingpod@gmail.com. Thank you very much.
You've just listened to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To listen to our other interviews, visit heartgiving.podbean.com. That's heartgiving.podbean.com. Subscribe to our show on major podcast platforms. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB Wise Giving Alliance or program affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Podbean's terms of service.